Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Worker who accuses a Novi car repair shop of violating his rights says he has the racist recordings to prove it tonight.
You can hear them for yourself. They are at the center of a federal civil rights lawsuit.
Only on 7 tonight, Aaron Baskerville is live in Novi with the story behind these allegations. Aaron?
Stephen and Carolyn, you said it, a 21-year-old has now filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against this place right behind me in Novi, claiming his civil rights were violated, seeking more than $1 million in damages, and claiming he has all the recordings to back it up.
Everybody's different. No matter the race.
Except for the Browns.
Huh?
Except for the Browns.
Not true.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. You just don't know enough.
You guys are all disrespectful.
Racist and demeaning conversations, all recorded by 21-year-old Ernest Garner, exclusively telling his story to Action News with his attorneys by his side. He claims these were all recorded while at work at Gerber Collision and Glass in Novi. At least four or five workers constantly degrading him. After quitting a few weeks ago, his nine-month stint over, he's now filed a federal lawsuit against the company headquartered in Illinois and his supervisor. He claims his civil rights were violated.
He said, "I'd kill you if it wasn't racist, if everyone wouldn't think it was a race thing. I'll tar and feather you just like they did back in the day."
You probably f***ing got it all around. Milking the f***ing clock.
Well, most blacks do.
What?
Most blacks do.
Most blacks do what?
Milk the f***ing clock.
Garner tells us he loves cars and thought he could move up at the shop on Novi Road and did. Promoted twice there, but alleges he never received a raise while his white co-workers did. His lawyer stressing he complained about the constant racist insults to higher-ups, but nothing was ever done, showing us a photo of the N-word scribbled on his car at work, claiming that was done by co-workers as well.
Next time you're going to do what? You're going to stab me?
I didn't say that.
Say, that's just a typical move.
Typical move for what?
Black dudes always stabbing, shooting.
That's just me, huh?
You don't like I hear, aren't you?
We reached out to the company yesterday. Here's what they told us, quote, "Gerber Collision and Glass only learned of this action late yesterday, meaning Wednesday, and as of today, meaning Thursday, we have not received a copy of the court filings. As such, we cannot offer any specific comment on that matter." The statement went on to say they have a diverse workforce. As for Garner, he says they have more than 166 recordings, but they have not gone through them all. Of course, we'll continue to follow this story. For now, we are live in Novi. Aaron Baskerville, 7 Action News.
Aaron, I just going to ask you one quick question. Are these two guys who kept insulting this young man, or were there more people?
In those recordings, I believe those are two separate guys. But he's telling me 4 to 5 different guys have insulted him throughout his nine-month stay here, working here. So there are several guys that he's alleging have abused him.
All right, Aaron, we'll have to see how this one plays out. Thank you so much for the live report and the story.
Racial classification confusion. They're going to be doing a lot more of that. Black against brown. talking about the Asians coming in. All your jobs are being sent to China, so you get mad at the Chinese. You pass the Chinese on the street, you don't like him. Because there's only kind of them Chinese that I don't have a job. What time is it? Okay. All right. Do what now? Okay. So, don't get mad at them. They have not taken your job. The people coming across the border from Guatemala and all like that, they're trying to get you set up to have a big, long fight with them. They are not taking your job. If I had a job, you know, and they came in and gave three fellas from Mexico my job, all right, I know that they did not take my job. The white supremacists took my job. Don't forget that, and that's who you talk to about it. Don't go and get mad at somebody because they say, well, I'll come and work cheaper. Okay, he will. You will, too, if you came from Guadalupe. I mean, you took everything that your family had to get here just to get a job mopping a floor. All right? And it ain't because the person that came to get that job is mad at you. So how did the person get the job? They got the job from the job-getting place, and that is the white supremacists. They are the controllers of all jobs. So I've said this for years. You can't pay me by paying my brother. Don't work that way. If my brother is working, and I am too. See, I've told black people this for years. Don't get me mad at, you know, I'm talking about my blood brother and whatnot, and one by the same mother and all that. I go to the plant, and my brother just picked up his check. That's his check. We both work at the plant. And when I get there, they say, well, we can't pay you, fella. We gave your check to your brother. And I say, no, you didn't. Say, well, now, I know you're going to be mad at him. No, I'm not going to be mad at him. You gave him his check, and he is entitled to his check. And so am I entitled to my check, so where's my check? And we're not going to talk about anything else except my check. Don't start talking about him. You ain't going to run that scam on me. I'm working too. I have served you too. All right? I'm serving you now. So don't tell me you don't have it, that you gave it to somebody else. No, it's impossible. So then I take it from there. Whether it gets rough or whether I decide just to back off. But I don't jump on the other fellow.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, February 9th, 2017. So I have been told this is our Thursday workplace racism broadcast every Thursday. Seems like we might be doing a good job clearing up some of the confusion. I used to get regular, and I mean from like lots of different people saying, you know, they appreciate the program and they particularly listen to workplace racism, but they're confused about the date of the program when it comes on. So I, you know, try to say this is we have three programs that are on at set times every day, every week. Excuse me. They're on the same day every week. This is one of them. Workplace racism is every Thursday. I try to even put it in the title, Thursday's Workplace Racism. It's every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Pacific. Now, you are overseas or wherever, you know, you'll have to do the math yourself. But every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, tune in. Again, I can reference Dr. Francis Cress-Welsing and I can report the essay that I wrote, which seems like eons ago at times. It's been so long. I think this is one of the few occasions where I've had a piece of writing published that I wrote like a long time ago, like months of last year, months ago. Seasons have changed since I wrote it. Like, it's almost like reading something that somebody else wrote. But the essay, Dr. Francis Cress-Rousing, Donald J. Trump and the Reconstruction of White Supremacy, that's the title. I published it. It's on my blog, and it's on academia.edu. You can download it, read it, share it. But it is up, detailing her prediction that Trump was going to be the next president. That essay, you can tell it was written far in advance of the election, because there is no gloating and emphatic slam dunk about her, you know, stunning accuracy. It was written, I think, right after the Republican National Convention, when he Trump was formally accepted the nomination. But you can check it out. It's available online. Reference Dr. Frances Cress-Rousing, where she said it is impossible to get 10 black people together and you cannot have a robust conversation involving all about racism on the job. It is super important, something that we are all experiencing, and folks should be willing to share. I think it's really important. I generally don't say this for programs, but this is one. This is not about being a spectator. This is not a broadcast where folks just chime in and, you know, I'm just going to listen in, see what they're talking about. Maybe it'll be entertaining for a few minutes. I can check that out. That's not what this broadcast is designed for. This is for victims of racism to share. If you have successes, if you have figured out some things that work well, that help you minimize problems on the job, help you neutralize racist activity, help you minimize conflict with other non-white people, so you can just go on your job, do your work, not be bothered, and, you know, stay on that job as long as you want to be there, retire, get all your promotions and raises and everything. Great. We need to hear those type of suggestions if you have figured out, you know, some things that are helpful on the job. If you're having problems, that is unfortunate, but that is the system of racism, white supremacy in the area of labor. And that's pretty much all non-white people, regardless of how many, you know, numbers are on your paycheck, large or small, you are still experiencing massive amounts of abuse and mistreatment on the job if you are a black person, even the former president of the United States. So definitely dial in, share. Also remind folks, it's very important. We have a lot of younger listeners who do not have an extensive work history. So it's very helpful for them to be able to hear the different experiences that folks have had, just so that we can all be better informed about the type of things to be on the lookout for on the job. I think that's something else that this broadcast in particular has demonstrated. You'll see a lot of patterns where it seems that whites are doing the same types of things on jobs to abuse and mistreat non-white people. So very important, I think. Dial in, share, don't be a spectator. Again, successes, problems, all of that is welcome. And if you have reflections, if you look back on some of your work history, times when you were more confused about racism, perhaps, and if things happened that you recall, you reflect on, and now that you have a better understanding of racism, white supremacy, you can think back, say, man, I would have done this. I would have not done that. I would have said this. I would have not said that. Just different things. I think that can be very helpful as well. And maybe even cathartic, just having a better understanding of racism. Just you can maybe for the first time accurately grasp what was happening in some of those situations. I think some people have had that experience. Moving forward, some people did write in for this program. As always, you can email if you're in a situation where you can't talk or for whatever reason you don't feel comfortable calling in. You can email your commentary. We'll read it on the air, and you can be anonymous if that's a concern. And you can share your thoughts. My email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. www.thefreedomfighters.com. Feel free. I will check as we roll during the broadcast, and we'll read commentary from listeners as they come in. A few folks did write comments before I get to some of the folks who dialed in via the phone line. First, I wanted to say hi to Akana. She was on the broadcast a while back, the Tragic Arrangements program with we had both of our guests, Chantel and Akana. They both have a white mother and a non-white father, black father specifically, listening in. She said, I think on that program, she said, I think the first Cows broadcast she heard was workplace racism. And my addendum, Akana does not have a special place in Gus's heart. I'm reminded, people have said that people like Akana and Chantel have a special place in their heart because they, whatever reason, having a white parent and a non-white parent, that never has made logical sense to me why that would be the case. Although I don't hear that sort of affinity for former President Obama, even though he would seem to qualify. But moving forward, I am a little all over the place because the place where I am residing, there is a black female. And she had a natural childbirth today. It was rather stunning to be present for that, to be in the middle of talking and writing about Emmett Till, and to have that happen, a natural childbirth. It was pretty pretty wild. Yeah, I'm still quite befuddled about the whole thing, but it has been wowee. Healthy child. Everybody is healthy. That's always grand news. Give thanks for that. But yeah, it has been a wacky Thursday. Gus might be a little all over the place, but trying to do our best, staying focused with workplace racism. In that same vein, the importance of parenting. We had a program on Monday that got rescheduled. It was going to be with the founder of the Black Women of Brazil website. It's a site they talk exclusively about issues dealing with racism in Brazil. They have the highest population of black people in the Western Hemisphere. Lots of issues dealing with racism reported in that area of the world. We've talked about a lot of those issues. It just got rescheduled. His daughter got sick, and even that now will be a part of the discussion because it's so difficult to get health care there, which again just reinforces the theory I've raised on the program before. If you look globally, nationally, locally, the higher the concentration of black people, the worse the health care will be. It'll be more expensive. It'll be more difficult to obtain. You see that worldwide. The lower the concentration of black people, healthcare becomes really affordable. It might even be public. I mean, it'll be great. It'll be everybody, even the crackheads and the bums will have world-class health if it's no niggers. Anyway, we will stay it focused, but that program got rescheduled. He should be with us. I think it's this coming Tuesday. I just have to look at the calendar. I know some folks were disappointed, and no need, just be patient, and he should be hanging out with us at the top of the week, but that was what happened. I posted it on Facebook. He found out kind of late. It was very short notice with the situation with his daughter, but so I found out late, so I posted it on Facebook. I know some people didn't see the post online, but that's what happened there, and should be going down next week. All right, with that, I will share one or two of the comments from folks who wrote in. And then we will get to callers. Let's see. Okay. Oh, this one's a little long. Let's see. Okay. Actually, I almost played this at the beginning. We had a black mother from Belgium on the program about last month. She was on the broadcast. She was on the broadcast, and she talked about her experience with racism on the job and just being really mistreated, and them expecting her to do all these things that were not a part of her job description. And then when she started just saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to do, you know, 50,000 other people's jobs when I'm not being compensated for it, I'm not, you know, getting a promotion for all of this. And then when she started to, you know, just have some self-respect and ask questions, they terminated her position. She was on the program. She talked about some of this in detail when she was with us last month in Belgium, no less. She gave an update. She is working. I can't read the whole thing because most of it's not about workplace racism. But what she said is she is putting her energies into being self-employed. That was one of the big questions or difficulties that she was having in terms of not wanting to put herself back in a position of having to work directly with white people, which is something that sounds very familiar, I think, but saying that she wanted to vote, put time and energy into being able to be self-employed, as they call it, so she would not have as much direct contact with whites and she could have more control over her schedule. She's a mother, so that's important for her, too, to be able to have more control over her time. She said, do folks have any tips or suggestions on productivity and focus? Any suggestions? If folks have any suggestions, she would appreciate. I know she does listen to the program. So any tips or suggestions on productivity and focus, particularly for someone who is self-employed? Next person wrote in. I wrote the broadcast at the end of 2016. It was in reference to a Christmas party. The topic was white people, alcohol, and their terroristic children. Gus often asks, how do you maintain being aloof without repercussions from white racists? Personally, I'm not thankful for anything. I did the work. I expect the pay. I can be fired at any moment, and I can leave at any moment. I'm courteous, but I'm not friendly. I'm here for one thing, and that's business. So far, that method seems to work. After my return to work the first of the new year, I received a 5% raise. There was a letter attached to my pay stub congratulating me on a job well done. Note, I've only been there for 4 months prior. Shortly after the salary increase, I was called into the office. I was given a company sweatshirt with personal thanks from one of the owners. The thanks was for a job well done. Not once did I thank them or acknowledge the wage increase. In my mind, I did the work. In addition, my daughter, who is 11, came to me about her workplace racism. Wow, that is amazing. That is amazing on many fronts. Wow, that's amazing that I was amazed, like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Dad and daughter having dialogue about racism. Like, we would be making gigantic progress if that was a regular thing where black fathers, black daughters, black mothers, black sons are having regular conversation about racism and what they see, what they think. Woo, we would make spectacular progress. But I was also thinking, wow, that's really, really sad, this 11-year-old being terrorized. So continuing, 11-year-old workplace racism. During history class, the teacher read the textbook associating slavers with planters. Wait a minute. Associating slavers with planters and slaves with immigrants. My daughter states that she challenged her white male teacher by stating the obvious. This is a slaver and slave relationship. She further stated the text is incorrect. A plus, A plus. The teacher acceded to her knowledge with shock and insight. She stated, my daddy teaches me what is wrong with history and how to Bravo, and how to detect racism. Currently, she's reading the biography of Angela Davis. That's, wow. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Spectacular job. Spectacular. A pluses all around. That is phenomenal. And that's just being a counter-racist soldier on both fronts. I'm not, you know, emotional, excited. I'm not angry. I'm just pointing out, you know, there are a few errors in the text here. What are we having for lunch today? Moving forward. That's how you being a professional soldier at 11 and on both fronts, even on the job situation. No thank yous. Just keeping it business. I dig that approach. I know for some people, they've shared, I guess, depending on the type of work environment, maybe even depending on the type of work that you do, that might not be viable. But I think Roz and others have said, hey, you just kind of lay it down from the very beginning that this is how I am. I'm just not, you know, into all of the extra banter and goofing off. And that's just not me. I'm a quiet person. I'm a serious person. I'm here to do work. That's what I'm about. I don't do a lot of partying and all that. Don't take it as me being aloof or discourteous. If you need help, let me know what you need and I will, you know, get on it immediately. But I'm just here about business. And if you can kind of lay that down from the beginning, man, you can exactly what the college. I think you can pull that off in a lot of situations and just be about your business, just in the way that you carry yourself on the job. And particularly if you can do that from day one, it's a lot more difficult. And I might even say it's extra challenging if you start off not being codified and then you try to switch to this. That's where I've seen a lot of people have a lot of difficulties and even end up not being able to remain employed there, either voluntarily or whites choosing to show them the door. But yeah, if you can start from the beginning with that codification and being serious, exactly what we just heard. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Folks who have a hand up, lines should be open. I will keep an eye out on the email as well. Feel free to chime in if you have a hand up.
Hello, Gus and other listeners. This is Akana. I have several incidents to report since I was last able to speak. And they're fairly interesting. Most of them do not involve me. It's with a close non-white black coworker. We both hold the same title, and there are only two of us with that title in our department. She was having issues with her computer keyboard 2 weeks ago, and she went to an empty cubicle. We have a higher turnaround rate at our apartment. So she went to an empty cubicle and took a keyboard from an unclaimed computer. Another one of our coworkers, a white woman, I highly suspect her of being racist, as I do other whites, but I'm more certain with her than others. She confronts my coworker and says, what are you doing? So my coworker ignores her and begins walking back towards her desk, which is on the next aisle. And this woman, this racist woman, gets up from her desk and gets in my coworker's face and says, what are you doing? And my coworker tries to change the conversation back to work and says, don't you need to be on a phone call, or don't you have some work that you should be tending to? And so this racist woman turns around and says, you have a bad attitude, and goes to sit back at her desk. So my coworker then decides to get a chair from this same cubicle because her current chair, I guess I'm assuming, was not to her liking. Although I don't think that this was a good, I don't think that that was very codified of her to do. She did it anyway. And this racist white woman then waits for my coworker to get back to the next aisle to her desk and tries to get up, actually does physically get up from her desk and walk all the way over to the next row of cubicles and tries to confront her again. And it had, it definitely implied that she was going to get physically violent. So the non-black coworker, the non-white coworker of mine, gets up and says, "Get out of my face." She says the woman's name and she says, "Get out of my face," and she walks away. So this is a huge ordeal. No one says anything to anyone about it until the next day, where my manager, who is also a suspected racist white woman, this is the same woman that denied me my Christmas bonus, and my manager walks up to the black employee and says, I spoke to racist white woman number one, and she came to apologize to me for the incident, which I thought was odd. The black coworker of mine tells my manager that she doesn't want to talk about it. It's over with. She just wants it to be done and we can move on to work-related things. So later that day, towards the end of the day, there's a meeting between racist number one, my manager, and racist number one's friend, who is also a racist, so we'll just call her racist number two. Racist number two and I have an extensive history. I have pages upon pages upon pages of notes on this woman. She's made lots of comments towards me that I guess would be considered microaggressions. She's made comments towards me about people's skin tones, about how they're so dark she can't see them at night, her husband's sexual preferences. Anyways, these three racist women go off and have an hour-long meeting. When they return, I notice that racist number two, who sits directly behind me, sits at her desk, and she's mumbling something. And I'm not sure what she's saying, but there's definitely an undertone of anger. My manager walks in about 5 minutes later and comes to racist number two's desk and whispers in her ear. And I hear something along the lines of, "Why don't you think she likes you?" I have a mirror in my cubicle to where I can look behind me. And I notice as my manager is whispering into her ear, she's looking at me through my mirror. So I'm assuming they were speaking about me. Anyways, end of that. On to another scenario. This involves my husband at his job. He works for the city of Houston. And he works with a large group of non-white men. Some of them are Hispanic whites. And I would say that they definitely display behavior that normal American, quote-unquote, American white men display as far as relationships with the non-white people at work. There's this one white woman that is on the previous shift to his. They hold the same position. They have to do the exact same thing. My husband's schedule is odd. He works nights 3 months and then goes to days for 3 months. Well, this white woman wanted his night shift and asked if, when the night shift came along, if she could go ahead and stay on nights and he would stay on days. And he consulted me about this, and I told him, no, we're not doing this. We're not doing any white people any favors. On top of that, he gets extra money when he works night shift. So since he has began night shift, this white woman has been completely sabotaging his work. I don't want to say anything that reveals his identity, but he works with water. He basically purifies the water that comes through the tap. This white woman alters the chemicals to where my husband has to come in and undo all the mistakes that she's made so that the city of Houston can have clean water to drink and bathe with and all that other stuff. He reports this white woman. He tries to speak to her about what she's doing. She ignores him. He reports her to his supervisor. His supervisor literally laughs at him in his face. I was on the phone and heard everything. Literally laughs at him in his face and says, "Oh, well, that's just how it goes around here." And I'll save the rest of my incidents if there's more time later. Thanks.
Fascinating. What exactly, if I may ask, what exactly when you were talking about the situation with the chair, I guess your coworker who changed the furniture up at her workstation, and this white woman got upset about it, and you said when she went to get the chair, you didn't think that was maybe the most codified way of doing it. Why did you say that?
Because there was already kind of some tension being built between the keyboard situation. So I felt like that my black female coworker maybe could have waited until tensions died down, or perhaps waited until the white female went to lunch or next day to change the chair. But now that you've asked me that question, Gus, I have to say that there's probably nothing different that she could have done to prevent this racist white woman from verbally and attempting to physically attack her.
Wow, that's it reminded me just that scenario. It reminded me of I think I got this talking to your cosmic sister Chantel about the possessive adjectives on the job. I don't recall if it was a situation that she experienced specifically with things being moved and somebody getting upset, but it was just, I think it was. I think that did come up somehow in her job situation. But the point is, I've said this all the time, it's not my job, it's not my office, it's not my desk. Like, we really need to keep that in mind when we are on these jobs, that everything belongs to these whites on the job, that they can, you know, get an attitude about anything. You use too much paper, you use too many, you use too much toilet paper, you use too many staples, anything could come up. Just keep that in mind. And that's not even saying anything about this black female's situation. I'm not even saying she did anything incorrect. I'm sure that's the type of thing that happens regularly. I think this race soldier just was being white. She was just practicing racism. Just who does this nigger think she is? Just going around here grabbing things like she had. That sounds like what racists do. I'm not saying that the black female did anything incorrect. I'm just saying that that's the sort of response that you can expect on a job. To not be surprised about that, and have your own code. If your code is, you know, hey, until somebody of authority comes to tell me that I cannot move this piece of furniture, I'm going to go get the more comfortable chair. Right on. and I expect if, you know, this sort of thing happens, that might have been her code to say, hey, if this white woman comes, or anybody comes and attacks me, and she asked a question, right? That's what I recommend all the time. Aren't you supposed to be doing work? She asked a question, right?
Yeah, she did.
That could have been her code. That could have been her code. I'm going to stay in the question lane. I'm going to go get this more comfortable chair before somebody else takes it or whatever. And until somebody of authority comes to tell me that I have to put it back or that I shouldn't have done that, I'm going to get the more. If that's your code, right on. If your code is, as you said, you know, this has already gotten riled up and I'm going to, you know, wait a little while. But I guess you even rethought that. If this is a race soldier, then, you know, she probably would have just, you wait till tomorrow, she would have came tomorrow to come fuss about it. Or if you wait till the next day, or if you waited till she left, she might have come back and seen that the switch had happened and, you know, still raised us think about it. I mean, that's what racists do. But either way you handle it, just having a code, that's the main point. Whatever your individual code is for handling the situation, you go that route. But just keep in mind, this is not, none of these things belong to you on the job. And any white person from the CEO to the custodian might be the one to come and enforce and remind you that none of these things belong to you. If other folks, if you have questions from what you just heard from Akana, thank you kindly for sharing. Or if you have observations, I guess, or you have your own situation you want to share, feel free.
Can I
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus, and the rest of the callers and the listeners, Rob in Milwaukee. This week in the classroom, a black male professor had us watch the movie Crash. I've seen it before, and hadn't seen it in a while. And I had an emotional response during the scene when the officer was molesting the black female in front of her attempted husband. And removed myself from the classroom, came back in, and I was having, like, I would say uncontrollable laughter at the parts that were really racist. And he asked me to stop laughing, or I think that was it, asked me to stop laughing. And I just said that I would excuse myself. I didn't see it getting any better. And I feel, I guess, a couple of different ways about it. Could have possibly tried to not have an emotional response to it. And the second thought I had was my laughter worse than the material that we were being exposed to. And my emotional response in hindsight was that I I expressed that I was expecting. And, you know, I've also expressed that I'm injured. So I'm unable to work right now with the injury that isn't diagnosed. So that puts extra pressure on the black female that I'm with, and she miscarried. And during the movie, she was actually going for blood work, so. Yeah, thanks for letting me share.
My condolences to you and your family, your partner. That is why, in my opinion, we should really be devoting maximum time and energy to solving this problem, because that is what the system of white supremacy is guaranteed designed to produce, and just stress, all levels of stress, and the workplace being one of the primary places that we are stressed, either on the job or because we can't get a job, or just everything that goes with that. So just, yeah, again, my my condolences to you and your family. And also, with the film Crash, I didn't find this out until, I think, that documentary, the BBC documentary, Black is the New Black. Thandi Newton is British. She has a white parent and a non-white parent. She doesn't have a special place in my heart either. She said about the movie, because she's the character that gets molested by the cop. It's her character. Her husband, I think, is Terrence Howard. She said in an interview that she did not know that was going to happen in that scene. She said that that was not explained to her adequately, and that she was, you know, stunned about all that. And I didn't learn that until like a couple of months ago. Like, I saw the film when it first came out, and we've talked about it before, and, you know, I have a lot of the same feelings that you do, I think, about the film. But that would be my lean, particularly in a classroom. This is a big time actress. If she's saying not just what happened to her character, but what she experienced as a human being was a sense of violation because she was not adequately informed about what was going to take place with that scene. Oh, man, it's nothing else to talk about with that film in a classroom setting. Like, that's slam dunk. Like, we're totally done. Like, I think you can take that however you want to in a classroom setting just with that alone. I would have the article in hand and make sure I had copies for everybody in the classroom. Did other folks have commentary, questions for what we've heard thus far, your own situation you wanted to share?
Agreed.
I heard you both. We'll get Emmy first.
Go ahead.
Really, just really quick. I am too for the previous caller. Sorry for your loss. I really don't have words, but just to acknowledge it so it doesn't seem like we didn't hear you. And to the caller before him, I cannot say for sure or anything like that, that, you know, whatever your coworker friend did was correct or incorrect. But I do understand the impulse to say that that might not have been the smartest move at the time. BGQ, everyone can do whatever they're going to do. But when you were telling the story that you went back to get the chair, of course I was muted, but I was like, say what now? And I think when we don't consider that that is, you know, the war zone of war zones outside of being, like, stopped by a police officer, it would just seem, you know, if you don't care, you don't care. And if you're doing it strategically, then I guess you're doing it strategically, which I don't know. And if so, that'd be interesting to hear, like, what's the strategy behind going back to get the chair? But, excuse me, I apologize about that. But it didn't, if it's not strategic, then it would appear to be inviting more drama or stress, or now having the evil, not that she didn't already have the evil eye of the white people, or that wouldn't have already happened because they're white and that's what they're going to do. But I understand being like, okay, well, you got the keyboard, you know what I mean? If you want the chair, there are different ways to do it. And it's like, I don't know, it seems like you're not really paying attention to the situation. And if this is how you make your money, unless you have the next move or whatever, you could very well be now, if you were already on the list to get terminated, now you probably like number one for these people to look at or whatever, and you would have no recourse. So is it really strategic? Is it really, you know, smart to do it in that way? So just to, you know, add like another perspective, because I too wasn't sure if getting the chair was the wisest thing. And it doesn't mean that you're weak or anything because you don't go, oh, I want the chair, I'm going to go get it right now. Like, it just means that maybe you decided to make a different move on the chessboard at a different time just so that you could avoid what, you know, did happen. Because now they're looking at you and you know, you have your mirror so you can see what's your face looking at you through the mirror. Now it's like all this extra stuff for what? So you could go get the chair right then at that moment after you got the keyboard. Like, that's like you're making an assumption that you have any power to control anything in a situation that you don't. So, I mean, you know, again, BGQ, she could do whatever, but at the same time, I myself initially thought, like, maybe that wasn't the smartest move at the time. I just wanted to comment, just so it's not like, I felt what you felt, too, is what I'm saying. And that's it. Thank you.
Right on. I did write down in my notes, I do think that's high-level counter-racism, having the mirror at the desk. I think Roz and some of the other callers have talked about having the mirror so you can kind of broaden your visual perspective around you and see what's happening if they're trying to sneak up on you. Like, that's professional counter-racist soldiering, having the mirror at the desk. Firefighter in Florida.
Greetings, everyone. I was just sitting here thinking with the first caller, got a question. Do you see your non-white black coworker or your situation improving at all, if what you're doing is it a career at that particular in that particular environment, and do you see your situation getting any better, or your black coworker? That's the question with the first caller.
Akana, are you still with us? Oh, she might have gotten disconnected.
Okay. Well, if so, I have a question for the the second caller, the male caller's second caller, what was the purpose for the film being presented in the, I believe, the classroom. I'm always curious about that when a person, and I'm assuming this was a white person especially, that would bring something that would encourage racism to be focused on or talked about. What was the purpose of the person bringing, or did they explain the purpose of the film?
Well, that's an excellent question. It's a black male professor, and it's a interviewing skills class, and the movie really did seem out of context. And before he presented the film, he asked if we've seen it before, and then most of the class has seen it before, and then he said, well, not from this perspective. And then he didn't really go into why, but we have an assignment that's an online assignment that we have to go in and do, and most of the questions are about racism. So I don't understand the connection to interviewing skills in the film.
Yeah, I think I've heard of the film. I don't watch a lot of stuff that's on television for the most part, unless it's in documentary form, something that, quote unquote, something that really happened. Although I do know, even in movies, that something that really happened, it's induced with a whole lot of fiction that took place in itself. But I'm just curious about that. And whether it was a white person or a non-white person, and you said it was a non-white person, which I don't have any problem with it, you know, to talk about racism, white supremacy is important to do so. Anyway, with the advent of someone else bringing up the subject, that's actually is a invitation, so to speak, to enter into dialogue. And I think even in situations that are not quote unquote workplace, and classroom does fit under that context. Even from that standpoint, I think it should be paramount that one comes up with questions more than statements or comments in the exchange. I've learned that to have questions prepared, questions and expect answers from your questions. I think that's essential. That's basically my observation so far. Thank you.
Right on. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in who have a hand up, if we have not heard from you, feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hi. I just wanted to make a couple observations at my workplace. I'm calling from Renton, Washington, and I'm a caregiver, and I work in a home with a couple of seniors, about four of them, and all of them are white. And what I've noticed the past couple months or that when their family comes in, they're not really friendly. I expect that, but lately I've been noticing it's getting a lot worse. Like, for an example, yesterday there was like a nurse that came in, and mind you, sometimes, most of the time, I'm the only one in the house with these old people. So when I open the door, I expect them to introduce themselves, or I'll say, hi, my name is so-and-so, I'm the caregiver and you're here for. And a lot of the times, most of the time, they'll just walk right past me, or they'll just kind of acknowledge me, but just go straight to whoever they're going to see. And I'll have to like follow them around the house because I don't know who just walked in. They're very rude. And another instance just happened today of the same thing. But when other coworkers are like, if the owner of the house is here and the same person walks in, it's a totally different reaction. And it's just been getting really frustrating for me. I do stay on code all the time. Like, I ask more questions. I don't really get emotional, but it's getting emotional for me now because it's just frustrating. You know, they don't respect you. And I always expect to get mistreated from white people, but I don't know. I just wanted to share and vent my frustrations. Thanks for listening.
That is sad to hear. Is it just, I guess, your sense of the phoniness, since it changes so drastically if the owner or whatever, if they're present, as opposed to how you're treated normally? Is that just the insincerity of it all that is frustrating you?
I think it's just frustrating because I expect them to act that way. But we are in, like, a professional environment, and I'm the only one that gets mistreated. I've worked with other non-white people, and a lot of them are anti-black, just don't have any respect towards other non-whites, and so it's pretty hard for me. I mean, I don't talk about racism or anything at the job, but sometimes I feel like I'm the only one that understands or notices, like, hey, like, do you see how we're being treated, or... You know, they just come in and we're taking care of their loved ones and this is how they treat us. I mean, I don't care, but, you know, if there was one lady a couple weeks ago, I went up to her and, like, put out my hand and she looked at my hand and didn't even shake it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be frustrating. Like, that would, I would feel like driving Miss Daisy or something of that effect. Like, if that's what I'm doing, just hanging out and taking care of these people, older white people, and like just the rudeness of it all. Like, I could see how that would be a daily frustration. Is this like a long-term situation? Is this where you're looking for a better situation, or is this something where, you know, you're trying to stay there for long term?
Oh, no, definitely not. I'm in school part-time. I'm actually studying to become a midwife, so this is just something I've been doing for, like, 6 years, and I've tried to look for other options or, like, other jobs, but racism is everywhere we go, in every, all aspects of people activities, so... I just try to strengthen my codification, but I know it doesn't help when it's, I'm taking care of mostly all white people and they pay like a lot of money, to be in these kind of living situations. So no, it's not forever, because eventually I want to own my own business and clinic and all that. But yeah, I just was really frustrated this week and just thought I'd call in and vent.
You should do some self-care. Like, that's really important if you know it's been a especially toxic week and, you know, they've been especially violent or you just are feeling, you know, especially stressed. You know, do some things that are constructive, that are going to, you know, help you replenish from everything that you've had to endure, because that's that just leads to a lot of illness and exactly what we heard already, the miscarriage and everything else. Like, that just is a part of the design of racism to have us in poor health. So make sure you do some things to replenish and heal from this week if you know it's been especially bad.
I mean, is there anything else I should be doing? Because, you know, I ask questions and I still get mistreated. I know we should always expect that. But yeah, I don't know why this week. I definitely need to do some self-care. But the reason I called in is maybe other people have suggestions on what I should do other than self-care, because maybe I'm missing something or I'm not going about it the right way, or it is what it is.
Any suggestions from folks? Other things she can be doing on the job proactively to try to help improve her situation?
It's as far as the job is concerned, I think, ma'am, that I would assume that you're doing all of the right things. I just heard from someone today said something that I thought was that made sense. Is that sometimes what makes a person upset is because that person is doing something that you wouldn't do, that you wouldn't do to them. In other words, you're a nice person, regardless of what you think about that person personally, and it may have been how you were instructed, as you know, from a child to now, about how to behave around a person. And when you don't see that it upsets you. It upsets you. So it's just like what Gus said. The best thing to do is to have an alternative thing that you involve yourself in, either with others who you have something constructive, positively involved with, or yourself. Some people call it a hobby, that sort of thing, to kind of like balance off that toxic environment that you know you're going into. And now once you come out of it, that you can, you know, detoxify, you know, to balance things off. Because we are, as you know, living in a world of racist white supremacy, so you have to expect it's going to be a lot of it around you, you know. And the times when you can kind of like get a respite from it, you take advantage of it, and that kind of like would recharge your batteries. I think that's what with me, through the activity of football, and dealing with young people, that's what helped me. And apparently it must have done something good, because I'm still doing it today. You know, as far as that concerned, how I use an activity, such as sports to be where I want to be at. And I mean, I go a long ways just to deal with those children, you know. But they help me more, as much as I reportedly deal with help them in that way. So I think the extra activity would kind of like really help you out.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus, and to the other callers and listeners. I came in about an hour late, so I do apologize. But I did get to hear the previous caller, and I agree with both you, Gus, and the firefighter in Florida. I don't know if you're into yoga or meditation. That might also help you to decompress, as well as nature walks, like just going into a space where if you're near like some trees and, you know, water, running water, things like that, where you can just commune with nature. Those things can help you to decompress as well. Another angle is as far as the way I looked at it when you were telling the story, and I agree with the firefighter. I think this, you probably, in Trinidad, we call that brotupsy, just, you know, how when you're taught to be very respectful and courteous to people, regardless of how they may treat you in return, that can be very draining and mentally debilitating. But I think beyond the scope of that, they might have actually made the job easier, because if they're not trying to shake your hand, then I would never extend my hand to them anymore. I would just cease to do that. That lessens your chance of you getting sick, because these people carry all their vectors of all kinds of disease. So, hey, not shaking your hand, fine. You don't want to shake my hand, then from that day forward, I would never extend my hand to them. I would just mirror them back without being rude or disrespectful, because it makes it easier if you don't have to deal with them at all. If they don't like to deal with you, then you just make it a point to ease back. And if you're in this, and since you know that they're fake, since you know that in the presence of the owner of the house, they're going to be phony and trying to act like if, you know, they're coming at you in a way in which they display some humane sort of behavior, then you just mirror it back and be as fake to them as they are to you. And when the owner's not there, then just keep your distance. You know, you open the door, they walk past you, you close the door, and you go about your business. As long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're not violating any of the rules of the job that you're doing, then at that point, and that's not saying that you're not going to possibly feel emotional, go through different things. That is definitely possible, because you sound like you're a very sensitive person, and you sound like you're a very positive and upbeat person. So it's very hard to be in that sort of a toxicity on a constant basis if they come over very regularly. But at the same time, they're kind of giving you a way out of even having to deal with them. And I agree with Dr. Darren T. Smith and others. I think Dr. Niana Rassian said it, that just being in the presence of whites, epigenetics, they make us sick. So if that's the case, for those people who treat you that way, give them a wide girth, and then you just go about your business to the best of your ability. And in your downtime, just try to do some things to uplift your spirit and to kind of balance yourself off and kind of bring you to a place of homeostasis so that you can start the next week fresh. And also a good thing, too, is if you can have a confidant that you can speak to and just kind of vent and get those things out, just the ability to talk and just be able to express what you're feeling and express those events can be very, very cathartic and very therapeutic. So that's something else that might also help. Also, Bess, I have a brief workplace observation. There's only one this week, but I found it to be very telling simply because of the psychopathology of white people was kind of on display in a way that nobody else noticed but me. And we had a meeting yesterday. Today I didn't go to work because we were snowed in. We had a storm that passed through. But anyway, we were in this meeting. It was our whole team. And they had this new woman who was taking over from the woman who was the department head for our department. And when we came in, into the meeting, my supervisor told us that we were going to do an ice-breaking routine, which they tend to do whenever new people come around and they want people to introduce themselves. So you're supposed to go, each person gets a turn, but you introduce yourself, you tell what your favorite childhood toy was, and then you tell them what you think one of your best attributes are as far as the job that you do. So when they finally get to this this woman who was taking over the position of the department head, it was just interesting what she said. She told the story of being a little girl and that she had her favorite toy was a golden retriever is what she said. And I told the story at the time in New York yesterday because I found it fascinating. She said it was a golden retriever and that she would take this golden retriever everywhere. And then she offers a caveat. She said, really, it wasn't a golden retriever. It was actually a black horse that she, because she grew up around other people that had golden retrievers and she liked golden retrievers, she made this black horse into a golden retriever. So anytime someone said to her, oh, that's a pretty horse, that's a nice toy you have, she would snap on them and yell at them that it was a golden retriever. And I just found that very fascinating because everybody in the class laughed. I mean, not the class, the meeting laughed and thought it was funny. But I'm like, is anybody paying attention to the psychosis of the person that's talking to us right now? The fact that she could look at a black horse and call it a golden retriever, she's practicing racism, and the golden retriever really represents whiteness or being white. And she couldn't accept that it was a black horse, so psychologically she turned it into a golden retriever. And for everybody who did not recognize her golden retriever and made a comment about her black horse, she would, you know, really lambast them. And I'm thinking, if that's how she was as a child, then she was pretty psychotic at a young age. And the same way white people convince black people to see things that aren't there or to alter our vision of reality to something that falls in line with the white supremacists, the dominant people, racist agenda they're perpetuating, she did the same thing as a kid. And I thought to myself, well, I can't imagine what kind of psychotic adult she is that we haven't experienced yet. If she's telling us a story about her childhood in which she couldn't accept reality for what it was, the same way white people cannot accept their genetic annihilation and their melanin deficient status and their genetically deficient status. So that was my workplace observation. Thank you so much. To the previous caller, the female caller, I wish you all the best, and I'll meet my line.
Wacky. Just wacky. The caller in Renton, I'm just checking in. If folks have other info they would like to share, observations or suggestions, that's fine too. But just if folks have suggestions for the caller in Renton, where she was saying other things she can do on the job, feel free to share those as well. That also is bizarre as well. I
went to the Renton Public Library yesterday. Wacky all the way around. Have you been to the Renton Public Library?
Yeah, I actually go there all the time, but I got a laptop, so I don't need to go there anymore.
Right on. Well, I had my laptop while I was there, but right on. Right on.
Oh, okay. You're going to the one downtown, right?
Yes.
Right next to the fire station?
Yep, right next to the fire station.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, thanks for the advice, everyone.
Right on. Other folks
have... Can I ask what she said? Can I speak?
Sure, sure.
Hi, I'm calling from Bothell, Washington. And this is my second time on the line. The first time I actually listened to my sister, she told me about it. And I just wanted to say I've been a caregiver for about 4 months now. And hearing what the lady from Renton said, it's kind of all making sense to me. I'm still a little confused because when I'm at work, being around most of the residents are white, I'm the one that's serving most of them or taking a lot of their orders. I have an instance where this family member, he only comes up to me and asks for his wife food or she needs to be toileted. And I can be busy as heck, and he will surpass every white caregiver in the unit and come to me. And at first, I didn't register in my head what he was doing. But as a couple weeks went on, I noticed he was going out of his way. And so it kind of made me get in my feelings, like, why is he doing it? Why can he see that I'm busy? Or that why won't he go to a white caregiver? Why does it always have to be me? And so I think that there's something deeper than that. I don't know, am I overreacting to the situation, or is there something more to it?
I don't think you're overreacting at all. If I'm understanding it correctly, if this, you know, I mean, geriatric race soldier is seeking you out specifically to be bathed, or if he has to go to the bathroom, if he has to have a bowel movement or anything, if he's exclusively selecting you for these duties, I mean, that to me, I mean, I don't like to reference, but Timothy Wise, admitted racist, he said he was talking about a white person, and then I think it might have been one of his family members, but they got like Alzheimer's or dementia or one of those ailments where you, as they say, lose your senses. And he describes her as being just the coolest white person ever when, you know, she was lucid and had all her thoughts and faculties. And then once this disease set in, she would spew all of this racist nigger this, nigger that, blah, 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 just, you know, that he had never heard from her before. I share that just to say these old racists, old does not mean not racist. And these are probably folks who have been around and seen all kinds of things. To me, it sounds like he is probably practicing racism and what he's doing. That even might be something that could be done, just noting that. Like, if is this, you know, policy for one patient to just exclusively go to one staff person? Because you said he would do this even if you're busy. You have, you know, a lot of other things that you're doing, and he's still exclusively targeting you for these tasks. Is no one else capable of, you know, handling his needs? Am I the only person that's supposed to take care of him? Like, that might be, because you can still stay in the question lane and just get that addressed and figure it out if it's a way. If he comes to you to just say, oh, well, we have, you know, such and such is available, such and such is available, we have, you know, more than adequate staff to handle whatever you need, I'm kind of tied up right now, but I'm sure we have someone else who can help you with whatever you need.
Yeah, I've made it a point one time because I thought I was going crazy. I was really emotional, and I made it a point to actually step out of the dementia unit and go to the bathroom or act like I was going to the bathroom to see if he would grab a white caregiver to help him. I was gone for about 10 minutes, and when I came back, he was standing by the door and then was like, hey, can you help me with my wife? And at that point, I was just like, okay, this is definitely more, I'm not overreacting, this is definitely, I'm being targeted. And I have brought it up to my manager, and they'll tell me I'm overreacting or I'm being emotional about it, and I'm there to serve them, not to speak out, I guess, so to say.
For that, I don't know how you presented it, but just for that, that's one where just having data where you can record like over a week or a 2 week period, like these are the times that I worked and these are the times that he has asked me to, you know, help him with whatever, whatever. And these are the times that he got other people, when you can just have the data where it's, you know, I'm just saying, is this acceptable to just have one person while I'm there where he's exclusively targeting me? And this is not, I'm being emotional. I'm not even saying, I'm just asking, is that acceptable? Cause there are times where I'm tied up and he's still only coming to me. Like, is that acceptable policy, here? Is that, you know, the way, is that the best way to do business, to just have one client who exclusively uses one staff member for their service? Is that the best way to do business? That may or may not work, but that's the way, since you were saying the concerns about them saying you're being emotional or you're just trying to make a stance out of this or what have you. I think documentation, we talk about that all the time. I've just seen where that, it's a bit more difficult for them to just dismiss you out of hand as being emotional, or you're just, you know, making things up that aren't there. They at least have to respond to the data. If it's accurate, this hasn't been made up, they generally at least have to give some sort of response to, this is the data, this is what is.
Daddy,
yes, ma'am.
When I used to be a caretaker for individuals with IDD,
if you could speak up, that would be helpful.
Is this better?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. When I used to be a caretaker for individuals with IDD, at the residential level or at a group home, we would have shift sheets so that what each person would do, and I know it's probably different than like a nursing home situation, but my final question is going to be, do you all have what your responsibilities or what you have to accomplish during your duty? Like, is it itemized? For instance, we would have someone who came in from, say, 2 to 9, and the person that came in from 2 to 9 would be responsible for A, B, C, and D. The person that came in from 3 to 11 was responsible for E, F, G. And then, like, it was all separated like that for sheets, and everyone knew what they were supposed to do. Do you have something like that that itemizes what you're supposed to do for your shift? And if not, do you all have any kind of like team meetings where you all, because I know sometimes in a caretaker situation, the team has to come together to discuss like patients and if they're having like any new medications being added to their medication list, or if they're having any new developments in their treatment, or anything that everyone has to be made aware of. And if you all do have certain team meetings, is it possible to request a like a possible sheet like the one that I previously described?
Yeah, since you brought that up, I'm actually, that's the funny part. I know our job is a caregiver, but I'm a med aide. So, yeah, I dispense medication. So, yes, it should be the caregiver's job to help these families or especially this family member with the toileting and the dinner and all of that. And he still comes to me, and I'm like, what? I even give the caregivers a task list, and they know they need to complete it, and they still don't. I don't know if they don't respect my authority, that I'm above them, and they're my boss. I'm their boss for the ship, or if they just don't care, or what's going on.
Wait, so that's not even your job, to be helping them to the toilet and giving them showers and stuff?
It is not. I'm a medic, so I give them the medications, I chart, I do all of that. And what I'm saying is pretty much, if I'm not the one caregiving, the white caregivers aren't going to do it on my shift. So if I don't do it, it doesn't get done. So I'm saying that's why I feel so aggravated, and they call me emotional at work, or I'm over-exaggerating or being dramatic, because I do complain to my higher managers that I'm doing all the work, not only my job, but for my white caregivers as well. and nothing gets done. They have task sheets, and they just look at it and throw it to the side.
Hmm. Have you put anything in writing?
The only thing that's in writing is, like, our task sheets, and they are, like, our shower logs, where they have, that's all initial, the task sheets, they have to initial, that's it.
Okay. Then my next question is, are they initialing the sheet saying that they're doing the work that they're not doing? And if so, I'm sure that's probably some form of violation. And I understand that, like, people are going to try to spin it to say, well, he just really likes you and you're so special and he only wants you, like, whatever. If it's not your job, it's not your job. And when I say in writing, like, I don't know if you all have to do log notes or case notes or anything like that, but attaching, like Gus had mentioned earlier, keeping a very detailed documented list of all the services that you are providing that fall outside of your job description and putting that into writing and formalizing it and with such a type of verbiage that's very professional and not emotional whatsoever, but saying, so that I don't, you know, have burnout or anything like that, it is imperative that we make sure that the delegation or, you know, separation of responsibilities, that everyone is carrying their share. And if someone is saying that they're doing something that they're not doing, and as a medication aide, you really can't be focusing on helping people take to, you know, go to the bathroom or a shower, because you can't make a medication error. You know, you could spin it like that, because you have to make sure that everyone's getting it on time, the account they're getting, the medication is correct. You can't miss a dose and all that. So you have to be really, you know, focused on that. And you really cannot be paying attention to who needs to go to the bathroom and be washed because they particularly like you. But being able to formulate that in the type of email that you can CC all the important people so that this becomes something that's written, non-emotional, professional, and we can go ahead and clear up this, because you're not, that's not your job. You're not supposed to do that if it's not your job.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
I'm glad to speak to that as well. That's something brief in regards to that, because I think that was brilliant, what Emmy just discussed.
I guess, Roz, you want to go first, and then, or I don't know, the other person that spoke up, have we heard from you at all?
Oh, let them go first then. I'll wait.
I don't know if we have
okay,
or not.
Good evening, everybody. Checking.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this is 302 from Delaware. Joined probably about 20 minutes into the call, so I missed the first couple of comments and observations. But I have one observation myself, which I've really noticed for quite some time now. On my job, I have one particular white individual that, you know, always talks about, you know, hip-hop, you know, really tries, I guess, too hard, sort of like the character on Higher Learning. He didn't play that character on Higher Learning, but I forget the guy's name. And, you know, several times I've heard him mention, oh, I grew up on a farm, you know, here in Delaware. And, you know, while I was growing up, you know, I listened to hip-hop and this, that, and the other. 9 times out of 10, when that conversation comes up, you know, I take a left or a right, or I just put my earbuds in and just continue to work. Because I've noticed through all of my years of working that if a white person, especially a white male, you know, is trying too hard, you know, to be down with the black coworkers, he's often looked at as being, okay, culturally sensitive. But if any other black person tries to do that with a white group of individuals, we're going to be called fuck-ups or quote-unquote Oreos. You know, so when that conversation comes up, I'm like, okay, you know, I just can't deal with it anymore. But one particular instance this past week, he began to talk about the movie The Free State of Jones. And, you know, he goes on to talk about, oh, you know, it was great how the white people and the black people, banded together in those times and fought for their freedom and this, that, and the other. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, like, well, you know, and I didn't say this, you know, the movie was at best okay, but it had a lot of holes and was very questionable. You know, I stayed codified, you know, and that's, you know, I didn't even take it there. But all the while I'm thinking, well, you know, in that movie, they portrayed, I forget whatever the actor's name is, they portrayed this guy as being the Jesus or the Savior for the slaves. Then he goes on within the movie to form a relationship with a black slave who prior to that had been raped by her slave master. So I'm thinking about those two things, like, okay, I wonder if he had sense enough to notice that. He didn't mention any of that, of course. And my other issue with the movie was when, you know, the white guy, you know, goes into the swamp.
We can't really pivot out to the movie review. We do want to stick to workplace racism.
Yeah, I won't get too much too deep into that, but you know, I just thought about that within my head, and I was like, well, you know, how can, you know, these folks, or is it even possible that these folks can understand, you know, the true meaning behind, you know, what they're talking about, you know, when he talks about hip hop, this, that, and the other. Okay, we understand that, you know, hip hop is inclusive, this, that, and the other. But just to constantly repeat it over and over every other day, you know, trying to, I don't know, I guess, tummy up the folks to make us feel comfortable when really, you know, that's not even needed. And I would just like to know, you know, should I continue to do what I'm doing, just pretty much ignoring it and not joining in on the conversation, even though, you know, he talks to other black coworkers that I talk to when this happens. And I think he kind of notices it when I don't involve myself in those conversations. It seems as though he's like, well, you know, this guy's being a little standoffish and this, that, and the other. But, you know, I personally think certain things, you know, shouldn't even be talked about at work, you know, when it comes to black and white issues. You know, when a white person brings up something like that, it's something that they can talk about. But when a black person brings up something like that, you know, we're quickly outed as trying too hard. When really, you know, they're the ones trying too hard. And I'll leave my line.
Just in answer to your question, I think Roz was going to comment as well. But just in answer to your question, I don't think there's anything incorrect about you not participating in these conversations. I think the very first person that called in this evening, he said pretty much the same thing. I'm just business on the job. I don't, you know, do a lot of smiling and joking around and all of that. Just business. I'm here to do work, do the job, get paid. Let's go home. So no, I don't think there's anything incorrect, and I am certain that the white person that you're talking about, that he notices that you don't join in and participate in all this, and probably the other white people there have noticed as well, if they have not talked about it, you being, you know, the quiet Negro, in the group, but I'm sure they tend to pay attention, acute attention to that sort of thing. So, yeah, but I don't think it's anything incorrect about it.
For sure.
Actually, Roz, hang tight one sec, because there are some other people that we haven't heard from at all. I will make sure I circle back to get you. Any of the folks that we have not heard from at all who have not commented?
Can I be heard?
Oh, young lady.
Oh, okay. Hi, Gus. This is the other caller on the line.
Hi, Brittany.
Yes, hi. Long time no hear, but I do listen quite often. I just haven't called in.
I just want to discuss my job. I work for the state in Medicaid, the Medicaid office here in Louisiana. And the office where I work, there are cubicles, individual offices with maybe 10 cubicles in each office. The office that I sit in does not have cubicles, so it's just an open space, and it's four ladies in there, three black and one white. And so I've been working there. This is a fairly new job. I've only been there for 3 months. And, well, all of us have only been there for 3 months, everybody in the room that I sit in. And the it's just always, like I said, it's three black ladies and one white lady. And it's always our females. It's always, now this white female who's in there in the office with us, she works at Chick-fil-A. That's her experience. She doesn't have any experience in healthcare, Medicaid, or anything like that. The other two ladies, they don't have any experience in Medicaid either. But me, I have experience in Medicaid. I've done it before. And she just started training. All of us, we're still in training for this position. The white female, like I said, she has no experience, but everyone goes to her and asks her what to do. Now, well, the two black females in the room that we sit in, they go to her and ask her, so what's the next step should we do on this application? Or what should we do next, like if they forget something that we've learned, that we've been trained to do? Now, I know how to do these things, but sometimes I interject, but 90% of the time I don't say anything. And sometimes, I don't know, because sometimes she's giving them bad information or she's kind of winging it. And when they ask me something, if I don't know the answer, I'll say, ask our supervisor. Now, our supervisors, we have two different supervisors, but both of them are black females. And it's like they really have a hard time, the two black females, asking a black person how to do something. And they don't know how to do it, but they all rather ask the white female who doesn't know anything and who's giving them bad information. So when they ask me something, I try to direct them to the supervisor if I don't know how to do it. Or sometimes I don't want to, like in an area that I may know how to do, but I haven't been trained in it, I'm not going to tell them how to do it. I'll say, go ask the supervisor, because I don't want them to say that, well, you know, she told me this is how I should do it, and someone's application gets messed up, and then it'll be, you know, just a meeting or a sit down or whatever. So I don't know. And then it's like the white female in there, she's so deceitful. It's like everything that she says is never 100% of the truth. It's like always partial truth. And it's like I sit at my desk. I don't interact too much in the conversations in the room. I think the vibe around the office now is that most people know. They told me that I'm different. That's what they said, I'm different. That's what my manager said. She's a black female. She said I'm different because I don't fraternize. Like I'm serious when I go into work. I'm friendly. I'm helpful. But I'm not going to, you know, suck up or kiss anybody's behind. So, and then also I realized, too, that white people, you know, even though, like, this white female in the room with us, she pretends to actually be friendly towards them. But it's like that friendliness turns, you know, very rapidly. Because it's like the black females, they go to her for comfort and for support. They want affirmation from her. And she notices that they do need affirmation from her and they do need comfort from her. And like when she's paying attention to them, they feel, you know, like they're flying high. But at any moment, she'll just pull that back. And then I see the black females, they'll just be like deflated. And, you know, it's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't, like I said, I don't interact much in there unless it's work related. So, you know, I don't making suggestions to the black females, like, you know, because what they should do or anything like that, because I don't want them to think, oh, well, who does she think she is? She's telling us, you know, we shouldn't seek affirmation from this white female and she's making us feel good, you know. So I don't know. That's my two cents. And I don't just expect anything from white people anymore anyway, because it's all false. You know, it's all a facade. That's my personal code. And that's all I wanted to share with my workplace racism.
Wow. Were you impacted by the tornado at all?
No, I wasn't. No.
I know.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that. I know we have folks down in the Louisiana area. The tornado damage was rather bad from what I've seen. That might have been the first time that I've heard that, like black people not wanting to go ask other black people for information. If they don't know something, they prefer to go ask the white person. That's kind of a new one. I've heard like black people not responding well or getting upset about a black like manager or supervisor or something like that, that they prefer a white manager or a white supervisor. I've heard that before, but just to go get accurate information, like anti-blackness, I guess, can manifest in a lot of different ways. That is a tough one, especially if they're going to this white woman for validation, as you said, and then she, whenever she decides, she just wants to have fun to flip and be nasty to all of them. That's a tough one to navigate, because like when people say, hey, I'm not going to intervene, I'm not going to risk it to try and go tell them that this white woman is giving them incorrect information, and, you know, for them to go back and tell the white woman that you said this and cause problems for you, I totally understand people. I mean, that's totally logical, and I have heard that sort of thing happen before. So, you know, I mean, you can only do as much as you're comfortable doing in terms of the suggestions. I think it's great, and just in terms of the observations, I think that's great as well, in terms of the way that this white woman is manipulating these other black females that are coming to talk, you know, friendly or whatever, to get validation from her, and the not giving accurate information, because, I mean, that's standard operating procedure, it seems, in training situations, or even if it's not training, where people are coming to them for information on the job, non-white people coming to them for information, and they give you pieces of it and little bits of it, or just sometimes just totally false information, so that you're not able to function at an optimal capacity on your job. I think there was another person that spoke up, and then we have Ken Steele as well. Was there another caller that spoke up simultaneously with Brittany?
Can I be heard, Doug?
Yes, sir.
Yes, good evening to all the callers. Mortgage banker in Virginia. Two things, not going to take up too much time. First one is the woman that I was having issues with, I'd say maybe a couple of weeks ago, in reference to made a threat with violence, and then also last week I think I talked about she was messing up my money. She doesn't speak anymore, which is good. I think she's noticed a change in my behavior, and just in reference to when she walks by the office and she's there, you know, not even the head nod, but that tacky little smirk, and I don't speak, it's just hello. And real quick, and I got that from firefighters, how you don't have to be rude, but you can be serious, and that was really, really helpful. One thing I am going to talk about is in reference to jobs, but I think this is, it'll go along with workplace racism a lot. It's just being serious about your finances and just being serious about having resources in general. I think I've shared last week that I was in the process of trying to purchase a vehicle. And the cows has really helped me, and particularly Mr. Fuller in the code book, about doing certain things and not looking to show off. And I'm just going to share an experience. I went into a dealership today. I found the car on the internet, and I took off work just for a couple of minutes to go look at the car. And I get there, I know exactly what I'm looking for, because the internet gives you so much information to where you don't have to ask a lot of questions. You can go places and not waste a lot of time. But I walk in there. I test drive the vehicle. I think the guy would be classified as Arab. He starts talking to me and, you know, trying to have conversation. And this lot has a whole lot of luxury exotic cars. And I sit down and I'm like, okay, well, just give me the number on the car so I can buy it. I need to get back to work. And he's like, well, hey, brother, you know, we can sit down, we can talk about this, da 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 da. And I said, well, first of all, he called me brother. And for some reason, I didn't like that. But then the other thing was, I said, look, we're only talking about the price because I said, I have good credit, I have resources, I have money. So I said, we just need to get down to the number. And he was like, well, we can't really manipulate or go down on the price. And I said, well, why not? He said, well, this is how I make my money. He said, the majority of people that come in here have bad credit. They don't ask a lot of questions. And I can charge 2 or 3 points on each deal, and that's how I make my money. And just by looking at the lot, looking at the kind of cars, and just all that information that he gave me, I said, he has a lot of non-white people that come in here that don't ask questions, and they're desperate, and they just don't have things in order. And the system of racism is set up to take advantage of people. So in my job, I do mortgage banking. I help people with their credit or any questions. Man, if you don't know something, just ask questions, because I can, after just me leaving there 5 minutes, I said, I can't imagine the number of non-white people that walk into this dealership every weekend wanting to buy a Benz or a Mercedes or any of these tacky items that racists have taught us to like, and they're getting taken advantage of. And this guy, literally, his expectation is that we take advantage of non-white people. So not only do white people do it, but, you know, other people that could be classified as victims do it too. So just take that stuff seriously and ask a lot of questions. And that's all I got, Gus. Thanks, man.
Asking questions. Very important, particularly in the context of workplace racism, job situation. Ask questions. Ken Steele, let me give out the number really quick as well. 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Mr. Steele should be with us.
Howdy, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Can I be heard?
Are you not hearing us, Mr. Steele?
Hello?
That is most bizarre. Let me see. Other callers, you all can still hear me? Other folks, are you all hearing me?
Yes, I can. Okay. I hear Ken Steele, too.
That is so strange. Let me try again. Mr. Steele, can you hear us? Mr. Steele?
Can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I'm on a VoIP line, so that might be what is causing some of the difficulty. I just wanted to kind of concur with the previous caller on the I guess the hustle that's going on with respect to non-white people who are trying to purchase vehicles. At one point in my career, I was on a sales floor, and I was sat next to a suspected white supremacist that, like one of the other previous callers mentioned, would always try to kind of get people talking, and would always try to kind of instigate interactions between himself and other non-white coworkers. And one of the things that he divulged in my time at that corporation was that he too was a car salesperson at one point in his career. And he made it very clear to me that it is just standard practice within auto sales to give higher interest rates to black or non-white patrons. And when I say non-white, I'm specifically mentioning people who are classified as black, because he specifically mentioned people who are classified as black, as they are the people who are to be treated in that manner. So as a result, anytime I'm on a car lot and I'm trying to purchase a vehicle or I'm talking to somebody about vehicles, you have to, as a non-white person, just assume that you're being that you're not being given accurate information. And the previous caller is right. You have to ask as many questions as possible. You have to ask as many questions as to the point where they get physically uncomfortable with how many questions are being asked. Questions, questions, questions. And oftentimes, the more you ask questions, the more likely you are to get what you want and to get what you're looking for. And if you can ask those questions in a calm manner, that is even more constructive. You will get what you are looking for. I had a situation earlier this week where I was dealing with customer service at T-Mobile. And I had to go through a number of managers to get my issue resolved. But one thing that I learned from an associate of mine back in college when dealing with some of these companies over the phone is that if you remain calm and if you can outlast the person on the other side, they will oftentimes acquiesce to whatever demands that you want. And the demands that I wanted was I wanted $150 credited to my account. I wanted a lower down payment on a particular phone. And I wanted free shipping on that as well, simply because I was grossly inconvenienced by their website. And I was made to make multiple orders and have my card charged multiple times. And the way that I was able to do that was simply by remaining calm. And anytime there was an impasse where, hey, I can't do that, I would just calmly ask for a manager. And if they didn't want to escalate it, I would just stay on the line and I would calmly ask again. And it took a few hours, but sure enough, I had $150 credited to my account. I was also told that I was eligible for discounts, so or some rebates. So I went ahead and put in for that, and then I was also given the phone that I wanted, an iPhone 7 Plus, 256. 6 gigabytes or whatever. So I got that, and yeah, so everything is good. I just wanted to say that if you remain calm and just can I speak to your manager, that is a simple question. You don't have to get emotional. And the whole time, by the way, I also reminded the person on the other end that, hey, you know, I know that this is a tough situation. I'm just trying to get this resolved. Constantly calming them down, constantly reassuring them that everything is okay and everything is all right. And yes, you will get what it is that you want. That's my contribution for now. That's just a tip and a story that happened to me this week.
Right on. Are there any people, I know Roz had a comment he wanted to get, and I'm just making sure, is there anyone that we missed completely who has a hand up that we have not heard from? We get everybody? Oh, yes. Are you there, caller in Florida?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me, guys?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I had a couple of observations. The first was there was a conversation. I overheard a black male and a black female talking about the president-elect at the time, Donald Trump. You know, it was, you know, it's they sounded very confused about saying, well, you know, this is not going to really affect me, and, you know, I still pay the bills and things like that. And so as I was walking by, he basically was saying, said, man, I wouldn't, you know, he was basically saying I didn't really want to do that job, which, you know, I pretty much agreed with him. But he was saying, he went on to say, man, you know, why can't just be, you know, you can't go out every weekend and just drink with the fellas, you know, have some alcohol or something. So I think I'm trying to remember what I said. I said, well, I guess you just have to move on, you know, mature and elevate. And he said, yeah, I know you're right. But then he said, to be honest, I don't want to elevate. So, you know, I just kept walking, you know, but like that was his response, you know. He said he didn't want to elevate. So another incident was they like, I've noticed white people, when it comes to language, they'll refer to me or maybe to somebody else, I guess in a second or third person. And they'll say, well, when are we going back downstairs to check on the new mail machine? Because we was getting a new machine installed, so the guy needed to go back outside to get his tools to finish installing the new machine. So the white person in charge was saying, you know, when are we going back downstairs? I said, oh, you know, he just needed to go back outside to get something. I'm headed back down there. And I just needed to pick up some stuff for the other courthouse building. So he was like, you know, okay, cool. And then there's been times when my other supervisor would say, you know, well, we need to get this cleaned up, as though he is going to help me do it. But he's talking about me, but he will say we, you know, W-E. And I never really understood that. Maybe it's some kind of control mechanism. But the next incident was, it was a small conversation where the white female was talking with a black female about, I guess, some kind of cable dish network service and them needing to lower the price. So it was real, like, short. You know, I barely almost caught it. You know, she was saying, well, you know, if they go lowering the prices, she says, I will be able to afford it. And then you will probably be able to afford it. And then the black female sit across from us. She wasn't in there. She said probably again. But she didn't say probably, referring to herself. You know, so that, I think that could have been an act of racism. And there was a white person, like one of the bailiffs, that stands in front of the building. And as I was walking out, he was joking with some of the other people or the other bailiffs out there, you know, some white, non-white bailiffs. So he pulled out the taser or the, whatever that thing is that makes that electric noise. And he said, you know, well, we'll have to try it. And then he kind of stuck the taser out, like it made that shh noise. And I guess he was trying to, like, you know, aim it in my direction. But it wasn't, like, necessarily close to me or whatnot. But it seemed like he was, I guess you could say, taunting me with that. And that's all I can think of for now. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Taunted with a taser on the job. Man. I thought that was significant as well. The white woman saying she could afford it and you all could probably afford it, where she's just reflecting her understanding of racism, white supremacy. White people are supposed to have more resources, better finances than niggers. That's what white supremacy dictates. The firefighter in Florida, Akana, rejoined us. She is a mom as well, so she certainly has lots of responsibilities, but she is back with us. Did you want to ask your question? I think you can get it in right now. She might be able to give you an answer. Firefighter in Florida, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I'm here. I'm trying to remember the question.
It was something about Akana and the black female that she worked with, like they're, I guess, improving things long term or changing.
I think my question was because it sounds like pretty hostile relations going on there. And my question is, do you and your non-white black coworker have any idea that it's possibly that the situations can get better, can improve to be more of a comfortable work environment? That's the question.
Hi, firefighter. I'm actually greetings. Not sure. I don't believe that we've really had any constructive conversations about easing the tensions between us and the other individuals. I was actually assigned to complete a project with the racist woman that I was referring to in that incident today. And I'm not really sure. I think that there's definitely still some tension there. I'm sort of hesitant with working with her. Of course, I try my best to be codified and complete all my job duties. But no, we actually haven't had any conversations about that.
Yes, I'm trying to apply logic and also my own experiences. I have never experienced it getting better, especially I think I heard the one that the example you mentioned, whereas the white female was at least in my mind making an attempt to be violent.
Yes, that's correct.
I don't see that getting better, but maybe you can tell me, give me more of an analysis of it. Excuse me, being that you are directly more observant on that particular situation.
Well, the white woman that did kind of display the violent behavior, she's had verbal altercations with other black women at the job. Two other black women, they no longer work there. So she kind of has a history of causing issues with the non-white women of my group. I at this moment, I can't think of any codified actions that we could take that could prevent her outbursts. I feel like they're sporadic. She occasionally will try to be friendly and joke around with us. And we don't really entertain it, but I'm not really sure. I don't see it getting any better.
Yeah. My experiences and from the standpoint of coming up with a solution for myself would be to, I don't know anything about the job that you are on. There are some jobs that give an employee the opportunity to transfer somewhere else. Then again, from me listening to people on this program, there's a lot of jobs that don't afford that. It's very small environment, and either you take it or leave it, one or the other. So I don't know what situation it is. It's some kind of way. Uh-oh. Did anybody other than me hear that?
I heard it,
but I can still hear you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's probably something, somebody made a mistake in the background. From where they're at.
is there any way that one can transfer somewhere else?
I actually attempted to transfer last year, and I was put on corrective action for incidents that were involving me being tardy to work. But I was only written up for corrective action after I submitted the transfer. And my manager of the department, who's also pretty pretty close with the racist woman that caused the incident, she wrote me up for that, and she denied my opportunity to transfer. So they definitely make it difficult.
Sounds like you are marked for something not too good.
Yes, I'm thinking that's correct.
Prepare to have something else. Prepare. I mean, you're probably already doing. I don't know for sure, but that would be my thought. That'll be my thought, to prepare for to be able to move on. First of all, most of us as non-white black people, that's something that should be in our background anyway, being that the global situation that we're under, global situation of racist white supremacy, it causes instability out of its victims. So I would say that it sounds like that it's not going to get better, especially if they're writing you up and, you know, have this list that they're not informing you of until you make some kind of action. Then all of a sudden you'll see, whereas, okay, we're writing you up and it's for this, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it doesn't sound too good as far as that concern. That you got to have a mirror to see behind you. Wow, I mean... I'm not surprised by any of it. We're living under a global system of racist white supremacy, but that is not really something to be in your workplace on a daily basis, to be compelled. And I'm not saying that. I mean, I can almost feel you in that, you know, that you got to have a mirror just to see behind yourself about what somebody is doing. It really is a very unhealthy environment to be in. Yeah, really. Unless somebody can tell me something different. The only difference with me is in similar situations, I was either not by myself, or it gives a situation to whereas I could have transferred, and they could have mistreated me in the same way, but it would be kind of like unprecedented because it'd be a situation to whereas, okay, well, you got to give some kind of precedent on you doing the same thing to a lot of other people, and apparently with the Dade County Fire Department, they weren't willing to go through that. They weren't willing to go through that with myself and a few other people that I still stay in contact with. They weren't willing to go through that. So, but a lot of people are not afforded that on the job, on their job, and that's what I'm learning from this program. That they're not afforded those type of things, and it's a lot of negativity that goes on in those environments that just says that, hey, you got to move on. You got to move on. But anyway, thanks for having a conversation with me.
Thank you for your questions. I really appreciate your commentary on the show. But also I wanted to add that she and I, my black female coworker, she and I, before this incident, when I began listening to the Cows, I began speaking to her about racism, and we are both now currently expanding our education. She's in her 50s. She recently just turned 53. We both are going back to school so that we can obtain higher education so that we can get out of this situation. Not to say that we won't walk into another bad situation, but at least we've got something, some sort of thing planned on how to remove ourselves from this, like you said, toxic, unhealthy work environment.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It's never too late. Never too late. That sounds very positive with yourself and another black female victim of racism that you're able to talk with on racism on that particular level. Wow. That is, in this global context, it's priceless. It's priceless.
I
know that personally speaking.
I just had a comment real quick. I always think about what Mr. Fuller said. He said that at times we as white people, like, we'll say something or we'll do something, but that's the first act. But you have to think about act 2, 3, 4, and 5. I mean, it's kind of funny, but I kind of apply that to, like, before I say anything, before I do anything, you know, I'm sure a lot of other people who are codified as well think about that. I just wanted to mention it. You know, you got to think about act 2, 3, 4, and 5, you know, as well. So I just wanted to say that. I don't know if y'all remember him saying that.
Ma'am? I do.
Oh, okay.
Was there someone who was going to comment? Oh, okay. Yeah, I do. I remember him saying that. Definitely, that certainly applies for the workplace situation as well. That's why I said even in the job situations, sometimes the best thing might be to say, I will need some time to think before I respond. And then you can take your time to collect your thoughts. That's a good one to employ. And it should be very suspicious, any situation where someone is, you know, demanding that you, you know, answer right now. I mean, unless they find you with, you know, a dead body or something, where there's $1 million has been stolen and your fingerprints are on the safe and they got videotape of you. I mean, unless it's something of that nature, I mean, you should be allowed, you know, some time to, you know, make sure you have your words correct so that you can give the best possible response. If other folks have commentary, Roz. Get him. I think we got everybody. Roz, did you want to get your additional comments in? Thank you for your patience.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. Yes, I did. To the previous female caller, I would just say brilliant counter-racist warrior work in a hostile territory to be able to work with another black female towards your goals on transitioning out of that environment. So I wish you all the best, both of you. And my commentary was for the black female caller who works in the area with the caregivers, and she's being severely mistreated. I thought that MA gave her great advice. I just wanted to add an addendum to that. The other thing you can use in your defense is the fact that, because I work in the medical field too, but I deal with insurance, and you being a person who dispenses medication, you have to be totally focused on that job, because you can kill somebody if you accidentally give them the wrong pills, because somebody's pulling you, you know, out of what you're supposed to be doing to go help them clean their filthy wife or whatever the case may be. And you can actually let them know, you're putting us in legal and financial jeopardy by having me do a job that I'm not supposed to be doing when I'm supposed to be focused on giving out medication, which can be a life or death, potentially a life or death situation. And I think we need to make adjustments on the way things are being run here, simply because, you know, my job should be to focus on that due to the fact that I'm giving out, you know, drugs that can potentially be lethal if I give the wrong prescription to the wrong patient. Thank you. And I'll mute my line.
important suggestions as well. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, if you have additional commentary, I think we got all the folks who dialed in with a hand up thus far. If you have comments and have not shared and you want to chime in, you should get your hand up. We have less than an hour remaining in the program, and if folks are satisfied, then we will not hang out. So do not dally. Go ahead and dial in now if you have something to share. And again, we should not have lots of spectators for this broadcast. I guess since you dialed back in, we don't know, your motherly duties might call. Akana, you said you had some other things that had popped up on the job. Did you want to share any other observations, or if you've tried out some counter-racist techniques, or even the development with this your black female coworker, since you all have been able to have some constructive exchange?
My additional commentary actually involves my mom, so you can give her a good cowbell. She had emergency gallbladder removal surgery last week, and because our familial relationship is well known throughout the office, this has kind of thwarted my plans on not communicating with her. I feel obligated to display quote unquote good daughter duties, I guess you could say. So people have stopped by my cubicle throughout work and asked me about her. She returned yesterday. So I made a point to make an appearance at her cubicle and display quote unquote genuine concern for her well-being. But it's definitely made it a little difficult for me as an individual outside of work. Having to deal with her can cause some emotional unhealthiness, I suppose, that's for lack of a better word. And it's just very interesting that between other black female coworkers, I notice a sense of dislike for my mother. I don't question it. I totally understand whether they have physical proof or not, or physical reasoning for not liking her or whatever. But I've noticed that they've now been extremely kind to her. Several of them have hugged her, offered her help outside of the job. And I just think that it's really strange that despite their personal feelings, now I'm saying this out loud, I'm kind of evaluating my own actions. We not all of us, but a nice handful of non-white black women at the job feel obligated to show some type of concern towards her. And I don't really understand that right now. So if anybody, if any of the listeners could help me analyze that, I would really appreciate it.
I have a comment. Maybe what I've noticed is about black women or black people in particular, myself included, that it's good. We can come together if it's for a particular cause and support each other. But once that cause is done, then it's back to, I don't like you. You don't like me. So, you know, I'm going to do what I have to do and you do what you have to do. But we can come together if it's a funeral at church or someone is sick or something like that. But once that function is over, then, you know, that resentment, that poison, you know, is still there. Just from my personal observation.
Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. I reckon, Emmy, you want to go first, then we'll get Firefighter.
Much obliged. Really quickly, I would just say for yourself, it's your mom. I didn't, like, I almost, when you were talking, I was like, wait a minute, you work with your mom. Your mom is white. The white people there are not liking you. Like, this is not a good situation. I didn't even put two to two together that when you told your story that you actually work at the same company that your mom works in, and all of that. But just, it's your mom, you know, and yes, there's a system of racism, white supremacy, and with that, deception is part of the way, it's just standard. White people do it, we do it too. It's a code, it's a way of being social, polite, and making sure that you keep the board, if we're going to use an analogy, the chessboard a certain way, and you're not the one going to get the evil eye from whomever. And it could even be, you know, other black people too. Like, you don't have to like somebody. You just do the dance. Like, that's just what it is. You know what I mean? And so my suggestion would be not to look too much into it to make it seem like it's something. This is just what it is. Like, someone had a baby, congratulations. Someone's sick, I hope you feel better. You know what I mean? It's just, that is the way that you do things. And so someone had emergency gallbladder surgery, oh, get well, I hope you're all right. Now, all the hugging and stuff, I don't know about that. That's your mom, so if you hug her, I guess, you know, whatever. But with the other people, I don't know. But I don't think that it is something that you really have to, like, over-evaluate or, like, over-analyze or anything like that. It just kind of is. But I didn't know that you were on the call. If you and this black woman, I didn't know that you weren't on the call when I had chimed in, because I'll say this just in case you don't listen to the archive. I thought the same thing about her getting the chair before, you know, you reevaluated it. There's no judgment to whatever her choice is. However, I'm not so sure that was the most strategic move, because now it's extremely hostile. So, yeah, you want the chair, but there are many ways to get the chair. Like you said, you could have got it at lunch, you know what I mean? That means the white woman would have really had to go out of her way to see if you got the chair, even think about you getting a chair, like, you know, whatever, whatever. But just making sure that the moves that we're making in a very hostile environment are strategic. And I'm not sure if that was you or another female who mentioned thinking about Act 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, like the end of the game, you know what I mean? Like, does this move right here make it so that I can maneuver better? Or am I going to lose a piece? I get fired and I have to have these conversations, and this white woman looking at me while I'm looking at her in a mirror, like, who needs this? You know what I mean? So if you're going to be talking with this woman, this other black woman, and y'all are whatever, like, that's going to be noted by white people. White people are going to know that y'all are colluding or close. So whatever she does is going to come a little bit to you too, which is why they're looking at you, looking at them in the mirror. You didn't do nothing with the chair, but yes, she has VGQ, but also bearing in mind that you two are kind of like linked now, you know what I mean? And so I would be like, you know, maybe that, you know, however you might have that conversation, it might be something to say, well, look, we need to be a little bit more strategic. Yeah, you want the keyboard and the mouse and whatever, whatever, you're uncomfortable, but let's make sure we do this so that we can at least keep the peace, so we can get our education and get out without having to all of a sudden be given a pink slip and now we don't know what to do because we're stressed because we're trying to get money. Like, just being a little bit more strategic. But that's all I have to share. Thank you.
I just have one comment. You say your mother is white. Is that what you said?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't hear that part. Okay.
And I did not hug her, by the way.
Oh, well, that's your mom. So.
That is,
can I be heard?
Hilarious. Yes, sir.
Yes, before I prior to making my statements, I was just thinking I had to qualify on exactly who I was talking to, and now that I've heard the other ladies speak, I have an idea that I'm speaking to the non-white person that has a white parent, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I was on the call with Chantel
right.
December.
Right. Okay. In that case, then I'm briefed in a lot more better fashion. The first person I heard that really brought it to the surface of
of my understanding was Mr. Fuller when he said that non-white people, and I would say especially non-white black people, are very much attracted to white people, very much. We in a lot of cases, we don't admit it to each other directly, but in our actions, if we're honest, you can see it, or you can find yourself behaving in that manner. And all the white person have to do is be a little bit nice, or show a little bit of pleasantness, and we will react in that way. Even from the standpoint, and I have observed this over my years that I've been on this planet, is that how we are attracted to the way white people look, even their features, would make us behave in a manner similar to what you were explaining. And once again, I would say that we, in a lot of cases, I've observed, and including with myself, that we don't admit it. And in my understanding, it's logical when it comes to the impact that the global system of racial white supremacy has on its victims. And I can go to the standpoint of Stockholm syndrome, to whereas a person could be mistreated to such a sophisticated level, to whereas they actually would identify with their abuser in so many untold ways, even to the standpoint of being attracted by them, as I mentioned. And I just thought that may have had something to do with what you were explaining. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you guys for your comments and your advice. And also thank you to Roz. And I also wanted to piggyback off of Roz's comments about the medication. I also work with health insurance. Before that, I worked in with investigational drugs. These drugs were delivered and received via police escort. That's how serious prescription drugs are. And if you are working in an environment with medications, not only could your company be fined, but you could also be fined. And I'm not sure what state you're in and what the laws are, but I just wanted to piggyback on Roz's comment. Yes, that's very serious. And all of your coworkers should take that as seriously as you do. Thanks.
Excuse me, wait a minute. Are you the same person to whereas the white person was following you around wanting you to help them with the shower and different things?
No, sir. I was just
Okay.
To the commentary to her situation.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I would say about that situation, it sounds similar to last week's discussion. To whereas that was a situation where she didn't have any training in that. You know, so I wouldn't do it. Period. Because I don't have the training. Now, if you want to train me and pay me extra money, to make that training a solid, then fine, I'll do it. But other than that, he can follow me around all over the place. I'm not going to do it unless I'm trained.
One thing.
You know, I mean, go ahead, Gus.
My apologies. I just wanted to get in really quick. One thing that has stood out to me over the last 2 months, especially, I feel like we've had a lot of people who've dialed in where the common thread has been other whites on the job not doing their job, either because of negligence, incompetence, laziness, racism, a combination of all four, other whites not doing their job ends up creating problems for non-white people who are doing their job, but they're ending up getting in trouble because of these white people not doing their job and figuring out codification on how to neutralize that problem. Because a lot of people are ending up getting stuck where they, I think the caller who dialed in, who was working with the elderly patients, we had several people dial in before. I think it was a female, black female who worked with an insurance company, and it was a white person who wasn't doing his job, so people weren't getting their checks. And it's the same thing. You're going to report that, you know, Susan is not doing her job, Bob is not doing his job, and they just totally ignore this incompetent white person, and it just ends up being the black person's fault. So really figuring out some solid codification when we see that the problem is this white person is not doing their job. How do we get the problem resolved there and get the attention directed there as opposed to me or any other victim of racism? Were you going to, sorry for the interruption, Firefighter, did you have more that you were going to share?
Well, based on what you just said, it sounds like as far as what probably would help as a solution would be Ed Williams' suggestion, you know, with the equal protection under the law and what's the other thing? Equal protection under the law and
due process.
Due process as far as that's concerned. And because that's eventually what's going to come down to, when you have white people, this group of people here who happen to be white, who are not doing their job, and it's obvious that particular job is theirs, and they're not doing it, and then they're coming at you. It is possible they could come at that non-white person and harm that non-white person, but. That's the time I would say that it'd be time that'd be the time to enact Mr. Williams' suggestion about the equal protection under the law and due process, and go through the different steps to your employer that I have a suspicion that there's some subversion that's going on this very important profession that we're in, and you know, on down the line. I think he adopted it from Mr. Fuller. I could be wrong, but I think he adopted it from Mr. Fuller, because I've heard Mr. Fuller first say that particular procedure. He basically put it into a pamphlet, but I would figure that'd be the time as far as additional to what you said. That's what I'm saying. Hopefully I'm making some sense.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think Mr. Fuller did verbally state that, was talking about that due process using the 5th and 14th Amendment to the Constitution in the workplace in a counter-racist manner. And Mr. Williams just wrote it out and codified it in a book. But if other folks have comments, questions, observations, workplace policy and procedure still. If you have checked out your policy, procedure, your manual to see if there are any phrasing that is significant, if you just see rules that are not being enforced, I think that's something, again, you want to check that policy out before there is a problem so that you know what the rules are in the place. That can be very helpful for you in your workplace environment to have read your policy and procedure in advance. Like I said, always, if you want to share here any portions that you deem to be significant. Other folks have commentary they want to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Emmy. I wanted to, this is not really, well, two things. I'm the one, I'm also 1842, I'm the one that was working in D.C. and kept getting touched. I have since moved on, but I still do similar work. I just do it now on the weekends. And it came up again, but not yet. Like, it won't happen, but
I don't even shake hands. And so I work the overnight, so I deal with the drunk white people. And they came in, and, you know, it's like the middle of the night, so my mind, go upstairs, leave me alone, unless you need something, in which case I'm a professional, so I'll help you. So, but one comes in, and he wants to give me a high five. And I was like, no, I'm sick. And he was like, oh, I don't care. And he's still like there. And I said, well, still, no, I don't want to. And then he was like, oh, well, you ruined my night. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was it. And I was really happy with myself in that moment. I just wanted to share that just because it's like an evolution of something I've always been sharing at workplace racism. So nobody is touching me. I have maintained my space and my boundaries. Another thing, however, excuse me, pardon me for that, is I wanted to just talk a little bit about being patient with other non-white people, specifically Black people. I have memorized Gus's prayer at the end of the shows. So I say it too, because I have been impatient and primarily with myself. I'm extremely impatient with myself and unforgiving, but I've been working on that. And in one of my classes, these students are, you know, apathetic, or they get very frustrated because non-white people, specifically Black people, are always told that we're stupid and we don't understand math or science. That's for white people. And so in my math class, I can see the students get very frustrated. And so I've made it, I mean, for me, I'm through with that. Like, I dealt with that all my life, being told, that's just not for me. I should just go be an activist or an artist, talk about being Black and how it sucks. And, so I make it a point to make sure that I understand the math through and through. And so I purposefully sit at a table, that's all non-white, and there's a Black male, a Black female, and a non-white so-called Hispanic male. And, you know, they'll get so frustrated. They'll be like, oh, this is stupid, whatever. No one cares, whatever. And I'll just stay diligent. And I'm like, no, we can get it. And this has been like about a month, and they were not really like liking me too much. But I didn't care. I still sat there and I still did it. And now, you know, because anytime I see someone, I'm like, you need any help or anything like that. And I've helped enough and kicked things in a way that it could be understood that they ask for my help. And now I'm watching them get it. So like the minute I'll be like, remember we talked about this, or I'll be like, remember that example? And they'll be like, oh yeah. And then they, you know, finish the problem and get the right answer. And then they're so satisfied with themselves, so happy that they got the answer and that they understand it. And now they're becoming involved. And you know, I just say, don't let anybody tell you that you can't do something, and don't like just accept that that's not what we're supposed to do. And like, we're not supposed to be good at it. And so it happened today, and I was really, really satisfied that I was able to help. And if I had been like, you know what, screw these little young people who don't care about nothing, we wouldn't be there, you know? But it meant, you know, not being liked for a long time. They still don't like me, but they want to get a good grade, I guess. So they don't mind being a little bit more open and being honest if they don't understand something, and me making sure, like, just stop whatever I'm doing. I don't even care. Like, I'll stay late if I have to finish it, but it means that we might understand this math problem a little bit better. And then it just changes the dynamic. Instead of being like the apathetic Black table or non-white table, we're like the ones raising hands, getting the answers right. And I dig that. And I just wanted to share. That's it. Thanks.
That is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Bravo, bravo.
Wonderful.
Any other folks have comments here they want to get in, questions? If you have some things that have worked out well for you, neutralizing problems on the job, or if you have suggestions you would like to, or even questions for any of the folks you've heard on the program.
Gus, I just wanted to give a shout out to Emmy. I've just listening to her over the last few months. Her growth and development has just been exponential, and just to hear how much she's improved just as far as her code and how she applies the code, her development of her own code. I just find it to be just refreshing to be able to plot her development over time from, you know, one situation to the next, and how she's actively worked on just transforming her understanding of the system and how she functions in relation to it. And I just thought that was brilliant. And this is, you know, this goes to all the other callers as well. Rob in Wisconsin, to hear the firefighter in Florida stories, your stories, Gus, about the things you've been through. These things are just really, really great. And it kind of gives a nice overview for other victims of racism to be able to see how each person's angle of perception, and then of course contributions when we all discuss things to holistically help each other, how those contributions help to facilitate, you know, growth and development as far as just, you know, counter racist code and just the ability to navigate the system. So I just want to say thank you to Emmy. She's one of my heroines. All of you guys, just thank you so much, and I appreciate each and every one of you.
I'd also like to give
at all without y'all. So thank you. And then that's it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's fine. I'd also like to give a shout out to you and me. I truly admire you. I see so much of you that reminds me of myself, but you, the way you grasp concepts and apply them so strategically, professionally, it's truly admiring. And I also have an issue at my job with touching, and I'm so uncomfortable with it that I have a hard time sharing it with you all. But I'm getting there. And I also want to give out a shout out to Gus. The Cows has helped me so much as an individual and as a mother, which is really important to me. As a wife, I'm overall a very much more constructive and better person. So thanks to all of you guys. I really admire y'all. Roz and Thomas in New York, Rob, the firefighter. I truly admire you guys. I'm very thankful.
No touching. That's all you have to say. Just don't touch me, please. I'm good. Much obliged for the love and whatever. But no, thank you. I'd appreciate it. Even if you've touched me before, you know, that's it. No, thank you. And just keep saying the same thing over and over and over again. And just stop them, like right there. Like, just, that's it. Because the feeling afterwards is just too much to deal with. Like, you always have to keep thinking about people just always touching you all the time and feeling just kind of nasty. But especially the more that you study white people and realize that they're just perverted in so many nasty ways. It's like no one needs that on their sexual body. It's like, you know, the sexual energy part of you, like just feeling violated all the time. Even their handshakes are just nasty, just nasty. So keep us posted and just be like, nah, like, nope, thank you.
It's really appreciative when I see it from a feminine standpoint to make that type of stand. It's really appreciative in my opinion to hear it, even hear it. I like it. I really love it. Thank you, ladies.
You have to practice that jerking away as well. I think that's important with the touching. If they put a hand on the shoulder or they try to grab you, I think we've had that before too. A caller dialed in before where she was talking about this white woman would come and grab her even after she'd said she didn't want to be hugged. She would grab her from behind and that sort of thing. Like getting the immediate jerking away motion, I think, helps. Emmy had talked about that before as well, so that it's, you know, hey, whoa, and immediately stepping away. So it's flagrant, blatant. This is not acceptable. And getting out of range so that they can no longer make contact.
otherwise, the workplace becomes a quote unquote playground for the racist white males and females who, as we logically understand, are sick in the most racist way. It becomes a playground to be able to, you're in that situation, you have to abide by rules and also, in a lot of cases, rank. And a lot of people are intimidated by that. And what I'm hearing is that that's over with as far as the intimidating aspect. People do have understanding. I don't care whether they're white or non-white. They do have understanding when someone is no longer is going to accept behavior that is not correct. And I just love to hear it. Once again, thank you.
I must concur.
Folks satisfied? Anything else they want to make sure they get in? Workplace racism related?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I was thinking of some other key important recent incidents. There has been a black female that's been working at my place of employment for over 10 years, and like in her department, it's not really a title for what they call a lead worker. And in about like four other departments, they have a lead worker and or like a assistant supervisor, because I guess those are the terms that they use. And like she's been, you know, like I said, been working there for a good little while, but in the other departments, they seem to have given a non-white person the assistant supervisor or lead worker title. But in this person's department, she didn't get that position. And she has been teaching a new white person who is very ignorant about what to do about the different jobs in that area. So this black person has been teaching the white person all of the things to do in the child support department. But yet they've been having these meetings, getting the non-white people who are lead workers in the other departments. I'm not sure what they've been talking about, but it's very interesting how they do that as a means to get black people to pretty much get in conflict with each other or, you know, start up something about maybe one person being envious of one another or jealous. I think they may be trying to do that to this person. And I've seen her all like the past couple of weeks, basically teaching her white coworkers different job tasks, but yet she isn't given the title they've given to other people in other departments, but the supervisors are white, but yet the assistant supervisors are non-white. So I you know, I've been thinking about that, and to add on two more, like last week we had a meeting and the clerk, he said that we were going to get a 3% raise. So this same female, I was speaking to her, and she asked me, you know, like, where are we supposed to get some kind of raise? So I wrote on the, like, on the desk, I wrote a 3. And the white woman, she said, well, wait a minute. What are you writing out there in code? You know, she said, C-O-D-E. You know, what are you writing out there in code? I said, oh, basically, you know, what was in the the meeting this morning. So, and then I said something about, because, you know, I can ask you some questions too if you want. So she ain't say anything, but, you know, she was being extensively nosy. And one last part was I was having a discussion with another black female where she was saying, you know, about how, you know, being called a nigger or whatever. She says, you know what, that's the first thing that they're thinking when they're thinking to call you when they get mad and angry. So she was like, well, if I'm called that, I'm looking at him like, is that the best you got? So I found that very interesting. She shared that with me, like you shouldn't get upset with that. You should expect it by now. So I almost felt like she was reading a code book or something, but that's what she shared with me. So she was saying, you should be asking them questions because they seem to know more about this than we do. So, yeah, that was a comment that I heard from another black female, and that's all I had. That's what I wanted to share.
Fascinating. Always great to bump into another black person that is codified in some way, shape, or form. That's interesting. I guess that's predictable, having the non-white people in the assistant manager position or assistant supervisor, and then the white people all in the executive management positions and that sort of thing, where they have the ultimate authority about what is going to happen, and then how they coordinate all of that. I think some of that is pretty standard. I think I've seen a good chunk of that myself in a lot of different in a lot of different work situations. We have about 10 minutes left in the program. If folks have commentary they want to get in, that other segment that the Florida caller just shared reminded me, Dr. Welsingman, I replayed her 14th visit this past weekend during the Super Bowl. She talked about that, how if black people are just being serious on the job, being serious, being courteous, not laughing and talking about, you know, man, that Tom Brady or something, not on all of that or name calling, worse, but just being serious, being courteous, being helpful, talking. White people, oh, exactly what you just said. Like, what is going on? Are you making some sort of code? Like, what? She described that exactly. And I have heard that from Mr. Fuller. I've heard that from Mr. Edward Williams. Quite a few black, particularly black people who study counter-racism. They study what it means to be white. They have said that consistently, that they have seen the same thing. And even a lot of callers, it's the same thing. When all of the people that we've heard for years saying, you know, I'm quiet, and the white people just go crazy. Like, oh my gosh, you're so different. You're so quiet. And, oh man, we don't know what to do with you. Like, we have heard that for years. Like, that is the same thing. A black person that is just being serious, courteous on the job. Oh man, we have got to really watch out, because they groom every aspect of racism, white supremacy, niggerizing us, is to lead us away from being codified, logical. Asking questions is to lead us to the exact opposite, and they can handle that. They can handle that easy. That's obvious. We've been in this situation for a long time. Other folks have commentary they want to share? Everybody satisfied? Nothing else they needed to get in? I will assume folks are good for the evening. We will be here tomorrow for Delectable Negro, session number 3. We're picking up on chapter 2. Very much enjoying the book. Wow, we just last week's session alone, the paragraph where he talked about seasoning and just putting that in a different context. Seasoning in terms of seasoning your food, and then what they call seasoning in terms of preparing stolen, enslaved, tortured black people to be enslaved in North America and the Caribbean and South America. that they call that seasoning and well as well. Even what are the implications of them talking about this process of terrorism and torturing of black people as seasoning and relating that to the culture of cannibalism, white consumption of black bodies, literally and figuratively. Delectable Negro, wowie. Tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we'll do the compensatory call-in this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we should be here the reschedule top of the week, Black Women of Brazil, the website. I posted some of the different articles that different folks have written over the years at Black Women of Brazil. That'll be the beginning of the week. If you have questions, problems, suggestions, if you're trying to find something in the archives, feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. And again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. State this regularly. You never know. You're out and about. That might be the day that you bump into Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, any of these other race soldiers, badge or no. Being under the influence, tobacco, alcohol, cannabis, whatever it is, I don't think any of that is going to help us neutralize a race soldier, solve our problem with racist man, racist woman, racist child. I think Dr. Welsing would implore us to protect our brain computer, make sure that we can crank, think at an optimal level, crank out solutions to the biggest problem on the known universe, racism, white supremacy. I think she would want us to be sober to do that. That's it, Creator. We ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.